The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of Territories Talk. I am your co-host, Shayna M. Smith-Archer. First off, let me give apologies for my co-host, Shirley Osborne. She won't be joining us today. Hopefully, Chris Ramos will pop in from somewhere around the world. He was traveling earlier this afternoon. So we're hoping that we're going to still have a very informative and interesting conversation with our guests. We would like to say welcome to our live audiences, as well as those that will be listening later on through our different media partners, whether it's Bermuda Channel 82, CBN Radio FM 90.9 in the BVI and the USVI, Radio TCI FM 89.1, Saber Radio PJFE FM 93.9, and Montserrat Radio ZJB, Cayman Mall Road Facebook page, as well as our Facebook and YouTube channel. So I want to thank everyone for tuning in as usual. I haven't been around for a while, so I am happy to be back tonight and here to share with everyone what's happening in our territory. So tonight we actually have a special guest from the Bahamas, as well as from one of our my home overseas territory of the Virgin Islands. So I am going to pause here and let them introduce themselves as we get ready to have a conversation about regional health care. So the doctors are in. So Dr. Vantapool, I'm going to let the lady go first.
Sure.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me on the show. The doctor's in. That's the name of the show I actually do in the Bahamas. So that's pretty good, right? I'm Dr. Denothra Archer Cartwright. I am a family physician. I've been a doctor for just a bit over 14 years. So family medicine is my specialty. I've worked for the Public Hospital Authority as a consultant. And currently I am the CEO and medical director of Medical Concierge Services in the Bahamas. So we do a mixture of primary care, concierge medicine. So we get to see all different aspects of healthcare throughout the Bahamas. And thank you for being to the show. I'll keep it very short so Harlan can get in there.
Oh, sure. Because I know you're going to share a lot more. I'm going to give them the story on how we met. So Dr. Vantapool, over to you.
Sure. Good evening, everyone. Thanks for having me on this show this evening. I really appreciate being here to share a little bit about healthcare in the region. First of all, I'll introduce myself as a medical director for the National Health Insurance here in the British Virgin Islands. And of course, I am a family physician and sports medicine physician by training, and it's a pleasure to be here this evening, sharing.
All right, great. All right, so as we mentioned at the top of the show, our topic tonight is about regional healthcare. You know, when I shared the post, you know, I found a quotation from Gandhi where he talked about, you know, our real wealth is our health. And there are so many things that have been challenging us. You know, in my little short lifespan, I've been around on the planet for 4 decades, but it's the pandemic. And it's amazing, you know, the different illnesses that are developing and coming on as course. And the Caribbean region is no exception to what's been challenging. So tonight we're going to try to unpack a little bit and relying on your expertise in this area as far as, you know, what are some of the things that we're seeing regionally that's challenging us, and again, get into what are our solutions that we need to look at. So putting the question to both of you, and again, you know, we're looking at, first off, you know, what's the state of health in your jurisdiction, what are some of the, you know, the things that you're seeing, whether it's causing sickness or even death, that is, and the trends that you're seeing in your area?
Okay, I guess I could get started. So the Bahamas is interesting because we are an archipelago. So we are multiple islands and keys, and we have people dispersed throughout. So we, in our capital, we have the majority of our population, and then we have a bunch of different islands with much smaller populations. So from a growth standpoint, we have a logistics issue of having healthcare accessible at a really high level in all of those places. So it's challenging for us to provide that type of healthcare. And you can find that on some islands, it's very remote, and you may just have a very basic clinic-like structure with a nurse. Mm-hmm. And then in our capital, we have a bit more, but we only have two public hospitals and one major private hospital. So it is already very challenging just with the infrastructure in place. So we were struggling because we had issues in the Bahamas. We're very close to the US, so a lot of our people take on a very similar lifestyle, which is less exercise, lots of fast food, those types of things, and kind of moved away from a lot of other traditional stuff. Mm-hmm. So we were struggling with that. And as you mentioned, with the pandemic, we really saw the gaping holes that we were like putting tape on. So that we really struggled with, you know, people, hospital spaces, bed spaces, where do we put sick people? And that was a really big challenge for us. And we still have all of those issues on top of what we had before. And I don't think there has been a lot of changes or improvements that if we were to have something like that again, we would still have the same struggles. In terms of the private care sector, a lot of small private clinics, not a lot of major facilities. And so healthcare access is still something that we deal with. And we do have like an NHI type structure as well that's been helping with primary care, but we still have a lot more work to do.
Okay. And Dr. Vanderpool, you know, Virgin Islands is also a similar archipelago, and, you know, she's echoing some of the things I know you're going to say in terms of what our challenges are. But, you know, I'll let you share in terms of whether similarities or differences. And sitting, you know, in the National Health Insurance, you know, you kind of have a front row seat to the health, you know, of the country.
Yes, yes. So as Dr. Archer Cartwright said, her jurisdiction is quite similar demographically to the Virgin Islands. We have just basically the similar sort of makeup from an ethnic standpoint, and also from the influence of Western diet, which is significant in our society as well. And what you find is that the incidence of chronic disease is extremely high, and we have a lot of challenges around that. We do have a national health insurance plan that is in effect. And of course, that is plagued with its own challenges, especially when you're dealing with a population where chronic disease is so rampant. You have a lot of high-end, high-intensity type of situations. Mm-hmm. So you have a lot of need for your primary care, but that, of course, you also tax heavily your secondary and tertiary level of care. So if we don't aggressively focus on our NCD situation and curbing on the number of NCDs that we have, then the sustainability of our national health insurance system is going to be severely challenged. And I think that is one of the main in healthcare in our region. Then, of course, I would say inflation, healthcare inflation is one of the, has been very significant, especially post-pandemic. The cost of healthcare is consistently escalating, and that has gone tremendously, is affecting the bottom line. So as Dr. Cartwright said, one of the challenges you have is accessibility, not from the standpoint, in the standpoint of being able to access the level of care that you need, and still find it affordable and appropriate. So access is dictated by these factors as well. So even with a national health insurance, that national health insurance has to constantly be looking at its bottom line, the costs of goods, the quality of care, and all these things that are things that could be negatively impact or overall health.
Okay, and for everyone's, you know, clarity, when we talk about non-communicable?
Oh, NCDs, yes.
What does that mean?
It refers to chronic diseases such as hypertension, diabetes, mm-hmm. heart disease, cancer, etc. Things that are chronic, yes.
Okay, so those are the diseases. Now, you know, in a way, it almost feels as if we become comfortable that, you know, someone develops diabetes, it's like we have medications for that. So we continue with the same lifestyle. And, you know, I don't know about you, Dr. Cartwright, but we've been seeing also high instances of cancer.
Yeah.
And is that a case in the Bahamas as well?
Well, yeah. So from history, we've had high incidences of cancer in the Bahamas, especially breast cancer in women. Very aggressive in young women. We have the BRCA gene. I don't know if you guys have heard about that. A lot of the research was done also in the Bahamas because there was a group of Bahamians that were coming down with cancer really aggressively. On top of that, recently, anecdotally, because we don't do a lot of statistical analysis, so I don't have all the numbers, but from what I've seen, what all the doctors are talking about, definitely we've seen an escalation in cancer patients and kind of how quickly people are moving to a poor prognosis is really
being concerning.
And on top of that, a lot of heart disease coming out of there as well. So a lot of sudden deaths, a lot of heart attacks. And, you know, I think that's a mixture of things related to the pandemic, policies, access to healthcare. So many different things are kind of rolled into, I think, why we're seeing a lot of that. We had a lot of interesting rules during the lockdown. People weren't able to exercise. There was one point where, I don't know how things went where you are, where we were told not even to come out of our house to exercise at certain times. It really did a lot of damage. And the other thing that I see popping up a lot is a lot of mental health issues. So people who were predisposed or struggling maybe prior to or even were normal before, they really kind of went over the edge with that. And some people just with dealing with the lack of social contact, you know, they're struggling with anxiety, depression, and then we've seen some other cases happening.
Okay. So the pandemic created other epidemics, basically.
Yeah, basically. Yes. There was an interesting paper at the beginning of the pandemic that talked about the sequelae of policies and some of the consequences of the pandemic itself. Mm-hmm. And the world didn't really look at that. We were very focused. You know, people were afraid, so they focused primarily on COVID, the disease, and didn't really think a lot about, you know, if we don't manage this in the right way, we may have some other consequences that now our health cares are really
Okay, so let's pause real quick, take this question from our viewer. They're asking, what's the difference between type 1 and type 2 diabetes? Anybody?
I can take that.
Go ahead.
All right, so type 1 diabetics are totally insulin-dependent diabetics, means that their pancreas is essentially sort of gone through an autoimmune situation where it's destroyed the pancreatic cells that produce insulin, called the beta cells. Okay. And that individual is completely dependent from very early on in life on insulin completely to control their glycemic indexes. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, the diabetic, the type 2 diabetic is the one that is non-insulin dependent. So you might be able to use tablets. You might have to use insulin if it's very advanced and the pancreas is kind of shutting down, but it's not totally dependent on insulin to control your sugar. So diet, exercise, using of tablets and even insulin, all the combination of those things are utilized most effectively to control that level of diabetes. Of course, it has a strong family lifestyle, ties to lifestyle and behaviors. And of course, there's tends to run in families and be associated with insulin resistance or obesity is one of the risk factors, of course, for type 2 diabetes.
So the same you actually wrote earlier.
I hope that answers the question.
Okay. I think it does, and Debbie, you can feel free to add to that. But some of the comments she shared earlier was talking about, you know, we are what we eat. And I'm hearing you guys talk about, you know, the factors now that go into some of the diseases that we're seeing. So we want to kind of touch on that. And she also said that everybody likes Caribbean food, so it's hard to eat healthier. But, you know, I don't know about in the Bahamas, but one of the things for me, I recall a doctor came to do a presentation at my church one time. I think he was He's a gastroenterologist. And he said one of the things that surprised him, because he came in, he's an expatriate. And he said one of the things that surprised him was the high incidences of colon cancer, you know, which are linked to, again, your diet. And he thought that in the Caribbean, where we have, you know, provision more homegrown food, so to speak, that we had basically adopted the American diet. And that's not essentially the healthiest thing, because a lot of it is processed foods. Someone also had made a comment talking about, you know, fast food and the different chemicals and that are contained in a lot of the foods. And, you know, in the region, we've talked about on this show before about the high import bill, meaning we're bringing in somebody else's manufactured food and what kind of damage that's doing. So let's talk a little bit about the factors. You know, you mentioned about genetics. Let's talk some more about food and those things that we can control, because, you know, I can't control who my parents and my grandparents were, but, you know, there may be certain things that I can do now to make sure that I maintain a good state of health.
All very true with the GI doctor said. Our diet has become very westernized, and even our traditional diet historically was related to a lot of times slavery and hard labor, and so people ate a very heavy starchy diet because they needed the energy source. So we've actually mixed the two. So we've mixed that high carb diet with the fast food and the Western diet. And it's a really bad combination for us, because the average person is not working, you know, laboriously in a field or walking to the places that they need to go. In the Bahamas, everybody goes everywhere by car, even if you're just going around the corner. And so you're not expending that type of energy to need the amount of calories that people are putting into their bodies. That's the first thing. So inputs and outputs. And then we have, to me, I think food, I call it food security, not in the sense that there's no food here, but the quality of the food, because you talked about imports. Mm-hmm. We spend hundreds of millions, billions of dollars on importing food. I don't know if we probably have similar histories when you had organizations like globalization and WTO becoming a factor in a lot of our countries and influence our governments. A lot of us moved away from a lot of farming and staples, fishing, which was something that our ancestors did. So even though they were eating a heavier diet, it was a much cleaner diet, and they had fresh provisions, fresh fish. They even slaughtered animals themselves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so now we just don't see that. Everything is packaged. It's very processed. Mm-hmm. We have genetically modified foods that we're not. And you can tell there's a difference. I look at a personal thing for me is when I go to the U.S., if I eat out, I have GI issues. If I go to Europe, I don't have similar issues because a lot of the food that comes is not a lot that is not allowed to come in that's going to be overly processed. They do a lot of fresh food farming and stuff like that. And so if we are going to look at a model, we need to kind of move away from this Western ideal of how do we see food and get back to a more natural version of eating, because it's just going to be healthier for us.
Yeah. And that's one of the things where, you know, being organic became a fad, so to speak, but that was essentially, we had to grow and catch what we ate, you know, in the Caribbean, again, before, you know, the trade, the globalization, as you said, started to come in. And it's not doing us that good job. And, you know, one of the things you touched on in terms of the historical aspect that I realized the other day was that in I know from my history, learning history here about the Virgin Islands, the slaves were the ones that cooked. However, they got the leftovers, so to speak. So this whole thing where we have pigtail, goat head soup, all of these things were because the plantation owner, they got the best part of the animal, and whatever was left over is what the slaves basically created delicacy, so to speak, out of, and were left to eat because it's, you know, chicken, what is it, chicken feet? It's like there's no, I don't know.
Pig feet for us.
if there's any nutrients in a chicken foot, but it's kind of like, you know, we were eating these even now. Mm-hmm. You know, while it tastes good, there's no nutritional value for it for us. So, Dr. Vanderpool, weigh in.
Yes, and of course, when you said that, I thought about the amount of sodium that mm-hmm. was utilized to even preserve these things, you know. And when you soak salt fish, the reality is you can soak it all you want, but that sodium is still embedded in the meat.
Yeah.
So it's still mm-hmm. high in sodium, even when we soaked it.
Yeah.
In addition to that, a number of the parts like the feet and the et cetera, those mm-hmm. are the parts that are very fatty in their nature.
Mm-hmm.
So if you boil pig feet and you see how much fat content there is mm-hmm. in that bit of food. So it's just not healthy for us. And those are staples in the Caribbean diet.
Yeah,
and even up to this day, so you have to make a concerted effort to reduce sodium, reduce fat, increase vegetables,
mm-hmm.
and of course fresh fruit. We have good access in a number of Caribbean islands to fresh fruit and some level of vegetables in some islands, but remember in places like the Bahamas and the Virgin Islands where we import so many things.
Mm-hmm.
The lion's share of cash crops, fast crops, lettuce and that kind of stuff, those are the things that are actually important for the most part. So again, the reality is we are not consuming real wholesome food in a lot of cases, and the term organic has many different quote unquote, it's a fancy word for selling food at a high
premium.
Cost,
mm-hmm.
a premium cost,
yeah.
And it's not always what it seems. So
yeah.
The only time you know what's going into it is when you grow it yourself in your backyard. Mm-hmm. That's the only way that you can guarantee that it is organic.
Yeah. And that is definitely one of the other things that most people don't think about. And we only started to think about when we started to see the label non-GMO. Because things were not labeled as GMO before. And it was, you know, health activists that would have gone in and said, hey, you know, people need to be aware of what it is they're consuming. Because these things can affect us later on. Because no one, No one did a study before we started to genetically engineer all of the different staples that we now have on our shelves and are consuming. So I know for me, you know, it made me really take a step back, Doc, as you're saying, to pause and really start to really pay attention and read labels in terms of what it is I'm buying and is it really what they say it is?
Yeah.
Or essentially a version of it, like literally. And what kind of effect now this could be having? Because I know for me personally, I started to develop a lot of allergies as I started to get older. And again, I suspect it is because of the foods. Because when I develop an allergy for something like pineapple, right? It's like, this is healthy for me. I'm putting it in my smoothies every week and thinking I am doing a good thing for myself. But again, I was getting GI issues. So I always had an upset stomach. And you know, congestion and, you know, different things would be happening. So I actually literally just a few months ago went to the ENT because, again, I was just always in this state of congestion, but I don't have a cold. So he asked me, well, I told him, yes, you know, back in college, but nothing recently. So he was like, okay. So he gave me the sheet. And something came to mind where I had actually read an article one time that says when your body craves something, sometimes you're actually allergic to it. And it is your body works in reverse. It's asking you to eat something that's not doing well with you. And I sat down and I checked off all my favorite foods. And I kid you not, maybe like 5-6 out of 10, they're telling me I can't eat this stuff anymore. So I didn't have severe allergies where, you know, I had anaphylaxis and trouble breathing or anything to that degree. But, you know, my upset stomach essentially was the signal that was happening. And sometimes I would even be itching, you know, but then it's like, you know, it goes away. You don't think anything about it. So, you know, tonight I hope persons are having a different perspective on this in terms of your health. And what are some of the things that we need to be paying closer attention to as it relates to our food, you know, because yes, your food is exactly what you eat. And I used to tell my parents all the time, I say your best medicine is your food. So let's correct your diet and we won't have to do the medication, you know, and as they have gotten older, you know, it's been a fight because they like what they like, but it is something where, you know, I lost my dad actually to stomach cancer about 4 years ago. So it's my mom now, and you know, it's always, she's diabetic as well as hypertensive, but we've seen some really good results in her adopting a more natural diet. So of the processed foods for the most part, and you know, told everything has to be fresh, not just pulling something out of the freezer and just basically heating it up in the microwave. Anything that don't want to be microwavable, not good.
Yeah, I mean, most disease, you're correct. It starts with the gut, right? Because that's where you absorb most of your nutrients. And so it's really important what you put into your body. And with a lot of processed foods, it causes a lot of inflammation and that leads to disease. And mm-hmm. So you're correct. Like with my patients, definitely we follow an anti-inflammatory diet in order to get them out of some of the problems that you talked about, GI problems, some allergic reactions, congestion, you know, people who are having these problems all the time. It's usually quite linked to those things. And then also I like to look at deficiencies, vitamin deficiencies. So a lot of people are eating such processed foods and imported food that they're not actually getting the nutritional value that they think they would if they were eating probably seed straight off the tree. So I think too, the mindset, and this is where education comes in, because we've almost adopted that, you know, things that are coming into our countries in this region are better than the local stuff. Whereas we're actually doing ourselves a disservice. So we need to get back to eating more, like you say, natural, because it's hard. Dr. Yeah. Vanderpool mentioned this label organic, right? So I've been buying a lot of stuff that is so-called organic, but you made a great point. We really don't know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And we're almost a few steps behind the food industry. They keep changing stuff. Mm-hmm. You have to then find out, like this recent, everything being labeled GMO, because someone pushed a law in the U.S. that everything that was being changed or any kind of GMO, they had to do it. So a lot of them fought that. Some of them don't even have it. They moved to bioengineered. And so we're constantly having to figure out what they're doing to the food. And so you really got to come back, hone it in, look at what's going on in our countries, and cut that food deficit of so much imports.
And this is where reviving agriculture as an industry is not just about, you know, the possibility of the ships start coming with the food, but that the fact that the food is actually healthier. And if it's homegrown, the idea in terms of accessibility and affordability also factors in, so we have a healthier population overall. Dr. Vantapool, correct me if I'm wrong.
There's no need for correction. You're absolutely right.
Okay.
Yes.
So, go ahead.
Just to piggyback on what you said about agriculture, I think it's critical that Caribbean islands really, really get back to growing their own stuff as much as possible if they're going to continue to improve their health of their population as well, because we're seeing where what you eat is such a major factor in what your health would be like, you know? Mm-hmm. And then, of course, a sedentary lifestyle where we're not exercising like we should, and we're not doing the things that, well, leading the active lifestyles that we once led, where we actually had to gather our food and grow our own foods and fish and that kind of stuff, where we were just much more active. And so the physical demands that we have, just the inputs and outputs, according to Dr. Cartwright, you know, that's clear. We're inputting way more than we're outputting. And so that's going to continue to cause major health issues for us.
I think we definitely have to add, agriculture isn't just about food security, but it's about health security. And, you know, we've already touched on this in the beginning, where we talked about the effects of the pandemic and what the pandemic exposed on of the healthcare system. And again, persons that had, you know, all of these chronic diseases were predisposed or a higher risk of dying from the COVID-19 virus. And, you know, it's COVID-19 in 2020. We don't know what's wrong the corner, you know, and persons may think, oh, we shouldn't think that way. But again, stuff happens. Nobody thought they would live to see something like this, you know. We hear about these stories of what happened 100 years ago, and here it is, you know, we're right in the middle of something as serious as that. So I think that hopefully that changed the perspective of most people, but I, you know, we still have that. We all went out and bought zinc and vitamin C and emptied out the pharmacies. But, you know, 2-3 years later, are we still on that track? Are we still as interested in living healthier lifestyles to make sure that we actually, you know, have a better chance of a long life? Because medication is not the road. And I know you guys are doctors, so you're going to still support me.
Yeah, well, you know, I think, and this is where I'm really for health education, because I know when we were educated in UE, you know, lifestyle was always the first step in any management. I know a lot of doctors seem to have moved away from that because the pharmaceutical industries do have a lot of, I guess, sway in how medicine is today in terms of guidelines and protocols. But if you go back to your initial training and the guidelines you would have learned years ago, lifestyle change is always the first step in management. Medication should be secondary. The problem is a lot of people don't like to, it's challenging, it's hard to change your habits. But what we need to promote is, and you said health as a priority, number one, and you mentioned it, health is wealth. You really can't do the things you want in life if you're having a serious health issue, if you have a chronic disease. Those things eventually become a stumbling block. It can affect your finances, your social life. You know, just so many different aspects of your life can be affected by a chronic disease, you know, and people have to understand that the cost to manage some of these diseases, it's hard to be involved in prevention, but it does take discipline.
Lots of discipline.
And I guess that's the biggest thing, because even with access to gyms and home equipment and all these other things, you know, it's still a challenge for persons, again, to change habit. And not wait till when you're sick, because oftentimes we make these changes after we've contracted a disease, you know, that basically the doctor is saying to you, if you don't lose this weight, you know, your heart is going to stop.
So I think health education, we need to start with the children, right? Because we need interventional programs for people who are already ill. However, it's very expensive at that point, where we could cultivate a new generation that thinks differently, that eats differently, that moves differently, if we focus on the children through the educational system and otherwise. We need focused efforts from our governments, from our non-government organizations, to be on the same thought process. And we need to have an intense campaign of changing the minds of not just adults, but making sure that we have a new generation that in 5 to 10 years we won't be facing these things. Until we do that, we're going to be spinning in the same cycle of chronic disease.
Just to add to that, really quick, panelists, the Health in All Policies initiative by PAHO is really intended to ensure that health is taken into account in all policies, school policies, whether it's the policy about soft drinks in schools, being served in schools, or whatever it may be, that we consider our health policies and policy making that we're doing. And I think that's critical. And it's something that all the governments of the Caribbean really need to buy in to and make it a priority in their health planning and their sustainable development plans. Because if you don't plan to have a healthy population, then you cannot have a sustainable economy, a sustainable country, you know. So it's so critical to the survival of us, even as a people.
And you know, that's one of the things that I thought about. But real quick, again, if you're just tuning in, for those on the radio, you are listening to another episode of Territories Talk. And our topic tonight is about, you know, health in the region. We started off with healthcare, but I think we're covering the gamut tonight. And I'm co-host Shayna Smith Archer. Chris and Shirley aren't able to join me tonight, but that's okay. They trusted me to hold the fort. And with me, I have guests from the Virgin Islands, Dr. Harlan Vanderpool, and from the Bahamas, Dr. Dinatra Archer Cartwright. See how long name like mine. So, but I think, you know, we've really been touching on a lot of points. Someone actually just WhatsApped me a question. This is kind of a pivot, but we're still going to have it. Would any of the guests say that the increase in some of the chronic diseases that we are experiencing now are a result of the COVID-19 vaccine? Is there any known link, or is any research being done? Because, you know, that's still out there. It's still out there, guys.
So that's a very controversial topic right now, especially for doctors, because it's been not the safest environment for us to have free thinking in the last few years. However, if you look at, let's just for documents, you'll see that there's about 1,200 possible side effects. Because there's no long-term studies, we can't say for sure. And so we have to, I think, face the elephant in the room that we have to start looking at whether that is a potential issue, and how is it affecting our countries. A lot of the European countries are now looking at the difference in death rates and the amount of deaths from years in the past to now, to try to see if, you know, is this a rise? Are we seeing something different, or are we just looking for something? So that is a big conversation internationally. In some circles, you can't talk about it. But, you know, people are seeing they're seeing with their eyes, even if people are saying something different. So different doctors have different views, and Dr. Randaboo might be different, but my opinion during the pandemic was, you know, personal choice, looking at the factors, making that decision. And I don't think there was enough information, correct information, for a lot of people to make the right decisions. As well, you know, anything that's new that's being put out there, you can't account for everything.
Yeah.
And that's why we do need to have choice whenever we're introducing new drugs or anything to people. So I would say we don't have enough information to concretely say, but we do know that there is an increase of heart disease in young men, you know, with the vaccine. Whether they say it's rare or not, we have seen cases. And so there are other issues that are popping up here and there, but it's going to require maybe years of study to really get to the bottom of all of this.
Okay. Yeah. Doc, you want to weigh in?
I just want to give a quick comment on that one. In terms of COVID-19, I have always, my thought process on it is that we've had essentially a pandemic on top of a pandemic. And what do I mean? We had the pandemic of chronic state, and then COVID-19 came on top of that, and that's why you saw such significant death rates, mortality, and illness related to COVID-19. And unfortunately, a number of persons that are currently having issues with post-COVID are also persons that have a lot of underlying chronic disease issues. So it's difficult to say exactly the genesis of their issues. And it could be that COVID-19 has compounded what was existing before. There's a number of schools of thought with that as well. And so we're really going to have to look and dissect the data as we go along. That's where our systems must adequately be able to capture the data. Because that's one of our challenges that we also have, because in order to make our statistical systems need to be strong. And so it is really one of the challenges that we also face as well. So it's a dynamic thing. But I do believe that COVID-19 and vaccines and so forth is a controversial topic. But it also gives us an opportunity to study things a little closer and probably learn some things that we would not have had the opportunity to learn before.
Yeah, it definitely, I think this whole experience, because even, you know, someone just, I had it up and then I took it down, where someone was talking about, you know, the approach to medicine, where, again, the pandemic brought out a lot of the conflict or perceived conflict of alternative medicine versus Western medicine, you know, whether we over-medicating, so, you know, our automatic thing is to, you know, run to the pharmacy versus, you know, are there other options, depending on your condition, that we should be looking to, again, to have that healthy balance in our lifestyle and also to promote good health.
Yeah, I mean, I practice a more holistic approach, especially being a family physician. And Dr. Vanderpool said he's a family physician, too. So I think we do have like a built-in holistic approach to medicine. Very kind of my training is very patient-centered. So we do try to. And for me, I guess I'm a minimalist when it comes to medication. If you need to be on medication, you're going to be on medication. I weigh the guidelines, and I look at each person and what efforts they're willing to make, because I've had people who, you know, you give them certain instructions and they lower their blood pressure with lifestyle, right? And this may be someone that traditionally they might say, hey, start them on a tablet, but you give them 6 months and they're able to lower a lot of their risk factors. Their cholesterol is down, their blood pressure is down. And so this may show you that this may be a person that doesn't need to be medicated, but just needed to make a drastic change. And so taking a holistic approach means you have to get to know your patient really, really well. So I tell people that, you know, you need to find a doctor that you're comfortable with, one that you can speak with, you know, and really kind of tell them everything that's going on with you. Because sometimes it's a social problem that's hindering them from doing what they need to be doing. Yeah. Or it's a financial problem that's hindering from them doing. And sometimes we can help these things. Sometimes we can put them in the right direction of how to get assistance. And so being a doctor today, you wear many hats. And I think in order to approach healthcare effectively, you have to take a holistic approach. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think a lot of doctors start out trying to over-medicate anybody. Mm-hmm. What happens a lot of times is people don't follow what they need to do, or they come in very late. Their chronic disease is really kind of set in. You have mm-hmm. to give them medication sometimes. They may have multiple chronic issues going on, which complicates things. And so when you're starting to get complications from chronic disease, it becomes a very difficult and calm manage, and you may just have to be on certain medication.
Yeah. Dr. Harlan?
Yeah, that's spot on. I practice similarly. You know, I believe very firmly that health and wellness should go together. It's mm-hmm. not just about, you know, just your blood pressure, and you need to get to the context of why your blood pressure is elevated. It might be that there's a lot going on from a mental standpoint, your environmental issues and other things that are contributing factors. So I think it's always important as a physician to try and dissect your patient. And in order to do so, mm-hmm. you have to have that open relationship with your patient. And it just can't be that you're insisting that the patient takes this medication, because pill popping is what and prescribing is what some physicians do. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, I think the outcomes are better a lot of times when you're able to help that person to make the subtle lifestyle changes that can make a big, big difference. Yeah. So I always tell my patients, you know, diabetic tablets, for example, the label says that if you're not going to use them in conjunction with diet and exercise, you're not mm-hmm. going to get maximum benefit. And so they have to understand, if I'm going to give you this pill, you have to commit to doing some form of exercise and to control your diet. And that's when you're going to see maximum benefit. So that's always a challenge. You know, in medical school, we were taught lifestyle first, but then sometimes when we get out here in the real world, people want to see that effective magic pill.
Yes.
So persons go to the doctor, and if the doctor don't give them a pill, somehow we don't know what we're doing or something like that. Mm-hmm. But that's all true perception and health seeking patterns of the individual. So some persons come to the doctor and want to be medicated. Others just want to actually have lifestyle changes and things that can give them a healthier lifestyle without the excess pills.
You know, and
I just want to say, I agree with him, you know, that some people want medication.
Mm-hmm. Well, Doc, if I sit down for 1 hour, the amount of commercials that these pharmaceutical companies are pushing, telling you go to the doctor and tell him you want this medication. That's where that attitude is coming from now, because the commercials are training us, you know. If I have an upset stomach, I already diagnosed as having IBS, and I need to go talk to you and say, Doc, I think I have IBS.
I do.
I already came in diagnosed because of this commercial I watched for the last hour, convincing me that whatever it is I am experiencing is because of this, the sickness this drug was created for. And then they telling you they could help you get it for free. So, you know, that for me just compounds and makes your job more difficult, because if you start to try to convince the person, well, no, it's not this, it's something else, and this is how we're gonna treat it, you know, it I can see where you have some very long conversations, because even for me, I am like so frightened by time. If you stop and really listen to the commercial with all the side effects, I am not going to take anything that's going to cause me to hallucinate and think about killing myself. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's not, but they say that part so fast. Mm-hmm. People who don't have these diseases, you know, carrying on in the actor portrayals as if to say this medication is making them be able to go hiking and kayaking and all these other things because we're taking, you know, the meds. But yeah, the marketing professionals or these pharmaceutical companies, they are earning their pay. Let me just say that.
That's because we're watching Western television, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of countries, these things are banned. And even in our own countries, we don't, that's not coming on our regular TV. It's coming because we're watching cable, mm-hmm. you know, internet channels and those types of things. And you're right. Sometimes, you know, it's like, oh, we'll cure your one simple thing and there's 25 side effects. And mm-hmm. so it brings us into kind of looking at what's going on in the medical industry. And the pharmaceutical industry, you know, during the pandemic, the FDA and different industries got scrutinized for the first time. Mm-hmm. And we were able to see gaps in what they were doing, especially when it came to funding and the way that they were processing some of these drugs. And, you know, so for me, too, I hold on to some key drugs that I know don't cause a lot of problems sometimes because some of the newer drugs, you know, they're transient, almost like fast food, right? They're transient. So I think, you know, it's a lot for a lot of for doctors to do today. We have to kind of be pharmacists and we have to keep up with all these different medications and trends. And we have to try to give our patients the safest path possible. But we also need to just kind of be cautious as well. So it's a lot more complicated than maybe 50 years ago.
Indeed. Yeah. Pharmaceutical industry has money. Mm-hmm. And obviously, they spend quite a bit of money to produce drugs. And there's certainly it's an investment. And they're going to reap the full and maximum benefit from it. Mm-hmm. Also, you have the biomedical industry as well. That's another fast and upcoming part of medical and healthcare, where a lot of funding is being funneled into those particular segments of healthcare delivery. And I think that the power of the pharmaceutical and biomedical industries will not diminish anytime soon because it's driven by lots of money, lots of funding, and lots of profits. So that's going to continue to be a challenge. Yeah.
So it's back to what we talked about. The key is to not require medication, to try and live a lifestyle where you can be disease-free and then, you know, enjoy wellness. You know, wellness is the new talk, which is a more holistic approach to health, not just being rid of disease, but kind of being optimized. And so that requires that, you know, we instill discipline. We have to do certain things. We have to be active. We have to watch what we're eating. And it has to become a cultural thing in the region rather than just, you know, someone preaching in your ear. It's got to become a part of our everyday lives.
And like you said, it starts with the younger ones, but it's almost as if it's the chicken and the egg, because then the parents are buying the junk food for the kids to take to school. And then at school now, we're trying to tell them, no, you need to be eating apples and grapes because the Cheetos and the chips are not healthy for you. You know, for effects, no, it's setting them on a path that later on, they're, you know, we're seeing obesity, childhood obesity on the rise in the region as well. I know that's a big thing for PAHO as far as one of their programs, trying to get that down because our kids are eating too much of the wrong stuff, you know, and less activity, like we talked about, is compounding it.
I think that's where policy comes in, right? So we have more than half of our children are in public school. And we don't have cafeterias in our school. So kids, they do have some lunch programs for the underprivileged, but we don't have cafeterias. So if let's say we had cafeterias and we banned certain things from being brought in, we could control to a large extent what the children are eating and they're exposed to, right? Yeah. There has been some programs to do backyard farming at the schools and then put that into, but there's no cafeteria for them to even use the foods that they cook, which would make them excited, right? I cook, I help grow these greens. So now it's a part of my salad. Programs like that would get kids a bit more excited. And for even the children that may have some lunch that's coming in, we have another problem where they allow some of the kids in the primary and the senior schools to walk out of the school, go to the neighboring tuck shops and vendors. And so you will see at lunchtime and even after school, these kids are buying sweets and chocolates and chips. So, policy has to play a role there. And so we need the political will to kind of like put politics aside and say maybe zone those school areas that you're not allowed to have fast food restaurants and sort of control that with cafeterias where we have a certain program for the food. Then the kids would kind of have to kind of conform a little bit and then maybe and educate them the same time. So you're not forcing them, but you are introducing things that they may not be able to be introduced to because of financial constraints or education otherwise. So we have to take those things in hand. That's why we need national policies and regional policies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Health in all policies. That's the only way.
That's where it comes from. Because again, everything that we're talking about, we can tie back to health implication. You know, whether it's again, things for me, like the other day, I was talking to someone about air quality and water quality. These are things that need to be monitored on a constant basis because they are affecting our health. People are developing diseases because of maybe mold in air quality, or the other day, the water. You know, somebody has to be monitoring and regulating to make sure that even the public water supply, you know, has a healthy level of chemicals and all of these things in it, because it can create problems for us. So no matter how many hospitals or clinics we build, you know, your population, it just keeps getting sicker and sicker. And, you know, as one of you mentioned before, you know, that a medical emergency can wipe you out. Imagine if you have basically a chronic disease for the next 25 years and you're just getting sicker and sicker. As time goes, that's not a good, when you think about the forecast now for a country, when you start to multiply these cases out, it becomes very problematic.
Yes. You made a very good point, Ms. Shana. Mm-hmm. When it comes to the environmental impact on health, that's an area that we're not very on top of, because what we do in the Caribbean, we really don't pay attention to a lot of, say, for instance, levels of arsenic and what's leaching into a water supply or food supply and that kind of stuff. That's not necessarily regularly tested. So we may be consuming a number of things that are leading to advanced cancers and that kind of stuff that we're unknowingly doing so. And we're caught in the Caribbean between North and South America. Again, you don't know what gets into the waters and so forth. So we have a lot of challenges in terms of not being able to control not even our immediate environment, but also the environment at large that we're living in. Mm-hmm. Environmental challenges are some major parts of my concern as well. If we're going to be able to really address our health issues holistically that we're facing in the Caribbean.
Yeah, that's really quick. Well, guys, as I said, this hour goes very quickly. So it's time for us to wrap up. But I think we really raised a lot of important points. And, you know, hopefully our audiences, they take away a lot to consider, some food for thought that, you know, our health isn't just about the absence of illness even, but it is more so. And I think that's even the World Health Organization definition. It's not just the absence of disease, but it's about the balance in your life, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, you know, all aspects and dimensions of your environmentally. And that's important. So I want to thank you on behalf of my team for being here with us tonight and sharing your expertise with our audience. We also want to give a shout out to our different viewership from New Orleans, West Bay, Cayman. Actually, that one wasn't up. Okay, next one. Montserrat and the Bahamas. And Pam says, thank you for an excellent creativity. Appreciate the initiative. And thank you for tuning in. So for all those that will listen and tune in, you know, be sure to visit our Facebook page, Territories Talk. We also have our YouTube channel that we share our link on. So, you know, persons can follow up on anything that was said by being able to go back and talk about it. So I do hope. And again, lastly, making sure that we also say goodnight to our media partners, KM Facebook page, Radio TCI, Montserrat ZJB Radio, Virgin Islands CBN Radio, FM 90.9, Bermuda's Channel 82, Radio Sabah, PJFE FM 93.9, and Barbados CBC Channel 8. So on behalf of everyone here at Territories Talk, let's continue to inform and unite our overseas territories. Have a good night.
Night.
Good night.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.